This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, friends. It's Michael Cruz Kane yet again, welcoming you to another episode of A Good Cry. I've stopped counting the episodes because I don't even know how many there are at this point. We've done so many. We are champions. We are thrivers. We are the heroes of sadness. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for subscribing, rating, reviewing, listening, sharing, whatever else. If you haven't done it yet, I hope you'll do it now or do it later or take a time machine and do it before. That's a fun, unique option that people don't usually do. Also, thanks to the people who DM and email me. If I haven't responded to you yet, I swear I am coming for that response. I will do it. I respect and honor every message I get. Thank you so much. On that note, I thought for Grief Thoughts today we would try something different, which is eliciting from you, the listener, an answer to this question. Where do you cry? What's your spot? For me, it is my couch at night when the rest of the family is asleep. That's probably my most common cry time, alone with my thoughts. Distant second, but also relatively common, is at any movie theater during any movie. It literally does not matter. I saw West Side Story, and there are a lot of times when people cry in West Side Story. I get it. But I'm crying, I mean, at the very beginning. Wow, this movie has just started, and boom, my eyes are full of tears. I do not think there is any movie. I double dog dare you to find a movie that I will not cry in. It's not possible. There's no chance. Then third would probably be the subway. I would say the subway would be my third most, but that's a distant third. Number one, my house. Distant second, the movies, any movie. Distant third, the subway. You can just hear a song. You can see an interaction, whatever. For some reason, I'm putting my sunglasses over my eyes and tears are dribbling out underneath the glasses. I don't cry that much, but when I do, those are the spots. Where do you do it? What's your spot? Let me know by DMing me at Cruz Kane on Twitter or Instagram or emailing me, this is the best way, at agoodcry@theradiopoint.com. That email address again is agoodcry@theradiopoint.com, and we'll talk about them on the show next week. But this week, we have my friend, writer, comedian, actress, podcaster, multi-hyphenate Nagin Farsad. She is, I guess, the best. And we talk about something that I had never even really thought of before, which is grief, but specifically through the lens of being an immigrant and what it means to be far from the people that you are grieving. It's just something that had never occurred to me. And as we open up this show to more and more different experiences, I hope to get more stuff like this into the show. Nagin is a delight to interview. She radiates fun, so it's like the most upbeat of any of these episodes that we've ever done, in spite of the gravity of the subject. We get into cultural differences, what it's like for her to be Iranian and a feminist and a Muslim. You get to hear me mispronounce Iran as Iran a few times, which is a bit embarrassing. And also we get to answer a listener's question about how you grieve without religion. I love this episode. I hope you love it. Thanks for listening. This is A Good Cry. I hope it helps.
This is so exciting.
Okay, I'm glad you're hyped for the grief podcast. Okay, the podcast is now. And so what we're going to be talking about today is the experience of grief as an immigrant.
Yes.
Insofar as like the person that you have lost maybe is not someone that you get to see as often as, you know, the people that a lot of the other people on this podcast have lost.
Yes. And then part two of that, just so that we have the appropriate bullet points at the top of the podcast, you know, so that people can follow along in the way they do.
Yes. Thank you for doing my job for me.
Yeah. Part is that sometimes immigrants whomst I grew up with don't show their emotions with respect to loss in a way that, you know, is popularized by American, you know, culture.
Okay.
You know, so I feel like that's another weird little phenomenon of it.
Well, I'm very interested in all of that. Yeah, I guess the question I would ask that we often kick off this podcast with, and you tell me if this question feels like one that speaks to you, is...
Yeah, I'm pumped. Yeah, what is it?
Really try and get everybody juiced. This is the most positive energy that one of these has ever started off with. You are just... you radiate happiness, which is frankly inappropriate.
Megan, so sorry.
Thank you. Yeah, apology accepted. What is your relationship to grief? How would you describe your relationship to grief?
So I feel like I've had some kind of like, you know, like headline losses or whatever. I've had some losses. I would say an average number of losses for an average person. I don't know. Do you quantify? Do you need me to do some stats on this show? Is that what your show is mostly about?
We're gonna match your losses.
Do you moneyball grief on this show? Is that what happens?
That's exactly what this is about. It's about finding the standard deviation of loss for each guest.
Right. Okay, great. Got it. But I would say that I've experienced some kind of like, I've experienced the pain of grief. But I also think the weird thing is that most of those headline losses, like, for example, when it's someone, you know, a cousin who's died younger than they should, has died in Iran. And, spoiler, I'm an Iranian American. Muzz, where you at, people?
Where we at, Muzz? I think it's amazing that you describe it as a spoiler. Like, we were going to reveal it at the end of the episode.
I just gave it away. I just gave away the end of the podcast. I'm so sorry. There's, like, really no reason to listen now.
We should have been able to skip through. At the end, we go, and she's a Muslim.
But I've experienced grief in the way that it's happened several thousand miles away. And it started... the death started piling up after it was clear to me that I couldn't travel to Iran because who amongst us isn't, you know, originally from an Islamic Republic?
But right,
for those of you who aren't, just for the two or three of your audience members who don't know, you know, when you're from a place like Iran, I was born in the United States, as Bruce Springsteen would say. But my parents immigrated from Iran, and my brother, and 98% of our family still lives there. So my entire extended family, with the exception of like an aunt and her three kids, are in Iran. And I have, you know, I come from a really typically large Iranian family. We have like tons of cousins and aunts and uncles. I mean, just, you know, a remarkable number. And I used to summer in Tehran.
Okay.
Me and P. Diddy, and it was so glamorous. But I used to summer in Tehran, and I would see all this family, and I was close with them. And then at a certain point, when I started doing stand-up, I started saying things about the Islamic Republic, just like casual things, though not even really crazy, but that enough that like... they picked up a piece of my stand-up on a satellite feed and broadcast it in Iran. And one of my several many aunts happened to see it and called and was just like, she looks great, but also she shouldn't come back because she could be on a list now or whatever.
Yikes.
I mean, why would they put a 5'4" person who's basically dressed like an animated figure like on a list? It seems... ridiculous. But there is like a, you know, 0.5% chance. And so, again, I know you're into statistics on this show, so I just want to quantify that.
No, that's big for us. Yeah, yeah.
So my whole point is that is why the grief started happening at such a distance in a way that I couldn't go. I couldn't go to a funeral. I couldn't experience the closure part of it.
Okay. And so just to recap, what's happened here is you used to summer in Tehran. You have tons of family there.
Yeah.
And you did stand up in which you referenced in some way this like socio-political things happening in Iran.
Yeah, just like vaguely. Yeah.
And the word on the street in Iran is like, hey, maybe don't come back.
Yeah, among the ants.
Sure.
The word on the street is.
That's what all the ants are saying.
Yeah. You know those bitches control that country. So.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that, but if you say it, that's fine.
All right. No, I know. Oh, I don't even know.
Now you double can't go back to Iran.
But also, I may have just like accidentally canceled myself as a feminist. I meant that in like a fun, like it's so ridiculous to call your aunt those bitches. Right. Like in a fun way. Anyway, sorry.
Yours was empowering. Yeah, my audience is mostly Iranian Muslims who love math and are feminists. So.
Yeah, we really nailed it then.
Okay, so you described the losses as headline losses. That's not a term I've heard before, but I think I immediately understand what it means. As opposed to like, you know, my sister's boyfriend's aunt's neighbor passed away.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
We're talking about relatively close family. Who have you lost in your family that lives in Iran?
Yeah, so I mean, I lost my grandmother. I've lost all of my grandparents, but my grandparents also lived with us for years in the United States.
Okay.
They would come and stay with us for 6 months, and then go back and then come and see. You know, so I was around them so much. So those losses were acute, and in the first one, I think I could have technically gone back, but there's some difficult thing happening with one of my grandmothers, but I ended up going back and seeing her her tombstone, and I realized when, you know, I did the thing, I got the news, I cried for days, you know what I mean, and then. My brain went into this territory of like, but she didn't really die, so it's cool. Like my brain just sort of like didn't, because I wasn't there, because I didn't have to experience like all of my dozens of family members, you know, wearing black for 40 days and 40 nights and that, all of that. Like I just wasn't, I didn't go to a funeral. None of that happened. My brain just went into a denial, like a really easy denial.
Sure.
And then when I went to Iran and saw her tombstone, I almost was like, yeah, but this isn't her tombstone. Like I didn't.
Yeah, prove it.
I think there's something about, I was like, yeah, let's dig this up. But there's something about, I think there's something about being at a funeral that like makes something real.
Yeah.
Which is so silly because now I'm like, oh, I get, at that point I was like, oh, I get funerals now. Like I can see how they're like super like a good idea.
I think you're saying it, you're making fun of yourself a little bit for making like a banal observation or whatever. But I think that is something that is a little bit profound that people don't think about, that those rituals are a way of being like, time has stopped for a little bit. Let's take a second to acknowledge that something has happened as opposed to just moving on. Like funerals are important that way. It's a way, it helps you process. This is cliche to say, but it's not really for the dead person. They're dead, but it's for us to be like,
right,
let's all just check in so that we know that this happened.
It's, and then not go, you know, it's sort of like, a virtual hangout versus a real hangout. Like I was moved and upset and grief stricken, you know, one of my grandmothers died of cancer and too young. Right. And, but it didn't, you know, in the way it didn't, it was just, it didn't register in the same, it just, the end, I didn't accept it really. And then I almost feel like it's just like one of those things, deaths that just feel sort of like they just linger still, you know, and I feel that way. You know, I had a cousin who died, you know, at 35, shouldn't have died at that age. And It's so weird because you really just like don't know where to put. You want a period of time to say, I'm going to, and I don't know why this comes to me. Like, I hope this isn't weird.
Say it.
But you almost want to, okay. You almost want to like go to a place and be like, I'm going to publicly cry. Like you, I think part of grief is a nice public cry.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. I feel like it's part of the recipe. And I feel like if you don't totally get that, like it's like you don't know where to put that energy. And then I think I made a short film actually during the pandemic about this exact phenomenon. We shot it in a cemetery in New York City or whatever. And we played a couple of festivals, whatever, just a short film to kind of get my little creative juices out. And it was about this phenomenon of two undocumented Iranian sisters living in America, and their kind of estranged father dies, and they do a fake funeral. They do a fake funeral on some other random tombstone at Greenwood Cemetery in Brooklyn. And that premise felt very real to me because my main experience with this kind of death has been that I don't have a funeral to go to. And I find it very frustrating, and I almost like I've long wanted to be like, should I invite a bunch of friends over and then they watch me cry outside? Like, can we do that? I don't know. There's something, again, because I just think there's something about the funeral that we got right, guys. We got that right.
We nailed it. I love the idea of a paperless post that's just like, hey, save the date, November 14th. Come and watch me cry. I do think, I'm not sure exactly what part of the public cry, or maybe there's multiple parts that feel good, like a good idea to you. But to me, the idea of everybody knowing that this thing happened to me is like, I feel like it's part, not that I want anybody's sympathy or pity or any of that, but it is just like part of my story to be like, hey, I want you to know that I have a son who died. You don't have to talk about it. I'm not trying to force anything.
Yeah.
I just want that to be a thing that I'm not hiding. I don't want to pretend that it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Which isn't to say that every conversation I enter into, I'm like, hey, yes, I'll have the fettuccine Alfredo. Also, just so you know, one of my children died. I'm not doing it. It's not like that.
Yeah.
The other thing about a public cry is that everybody knows.
Right.
It's like a thing where, you know, the information has been shared, so you don't have to repeatedly tell people, this is why I'm acting like a sad person. This is why I'm sad.
Right. Yeah, it's so funny that you mentioned that, just that like the everybody knows thing. Yeah, I was just yesterday having lunch with a friend. I have a few of those.
Wow.
Again, not trying to brag. But we were having lunch, and I was mentioning to him that like someone we knew in common, like that I barely knew. I had emailed him for some professional reason. He hasn't responded yet, and I was just like, "Oh, it's like it's weird. He hasn't responded, or I feel bad. He hasn't responded. It's making me feel bad." And he said, "Oh, just so you know, like a few years ago, he lost his son," which I don't mean to say is like a reason he does or does not respond to emails, but I don't know. It just seems like useful information. And again, this is like a professional contact. Like I don't know much about his life, but I actually found that information to be useful. Not that I now don't expect him to respond to emails or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? Like it's just that it was weirdly useful, and I probably don't expect him to respond to emails.
Well, it's like a thing that it's everybody's fighting a hard battle. It's one of those things that you like forget. And when you're corresponding with someone, especially professionally, what you expect in that, I'm not going to say you, what I expect in that interaction is professional correspondence, because what that person is to me is a professional contact, period.
Right.
But then you go, here's something else about that person. That person's mom died of cancer. And then you're like, oh, right. That's a full human being. It's not just the person that I sent an email to.
Yeah, and we're all full human beings. Like, what a great reminder.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I think that is one of the things that grief really serves to do. Like, in fact, nothing really more than grief to be like, oh, right, that person has other things happening for them that when I am aware of them, when I put that into the algorithm of how I perceive that person, it changes what I expect of them.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And it absolutely. And I think in what, you know, exactly when he was told me, I just thought, well, I would probably never have a timely response to an email ever again if like that, you know.
Yeah, I would never write another email.
Yeah. I was like, that I, you know, that's because as you know, I mean, that is the biggest headline grief of all of the, of all of the griefs.
Sure.
So it completely, the expectations of a person to me completely change once, like, I know that about them.
You said that you went back to Iran and you saw the tombstone of your grandmother.
Yeah.
Did that feel like it helped you process it? Was that, I mean, enough isn't exactly the right word, but...
Well, the interesting thing is, I think what helped me actually process it, because I also, you know, because the tombstone felt still so, like, a place I can't go back to easily. Like, it just didn't, you know, it still felt like logistically, like, I don't know. I like the idea of being able to go and visit a tombstone,
sure.
I guess, you know, and this was something that I wouldn't be able to go back and visit. But what helped me was that I was there with my cousins and they, it didn't even occur to me that this would happen, but they brought water with them to clean the tombstone. And they, you know, and we all gently cleaned this tombstone of any of like the dust and debris that like maybe had accumulated. And, you know, and you could tell that my cousins did this all the time, you know, they did this very frequently. And that actually just seeing them like continue to take care of a thing out of love for a person. Again, because she doesn't know that her tombstone has dust on it.
Yeah.
But I just like that moment and just seeing specifically how they did it. They did it with such care. Oh my God, it really stuck with me. And I think it helped me feel more like, oh, she's really not here.
It's not my grandmother, and that's so beautiful to me.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and also, like, it's also so weird because, you know, I'm wearing the fucking Muslim gear, right?
Sure, the gear.
And you know, and we had just, they were like, oh, let's go see this, this beautiful... religious thing that the first Ayatollah had made, and it's gold, and it's just grandiose and it's beautiful. And I had to do the thing where like I was with all my male cousins, and I had to enter on a separate side for the ladies. And and I remember just. It, well, like, it's just to, like, be in Islam a bunch on that day. It was all – and also to see, you know, to see people – because I'm not that spiritual. I don't know if you can tell. and to see people in Islam when, the praying looks like a little, like, CrossFit workout, whatever. And that is it's really meditative.
Yeah.
You're doing a child's pose on the ground. It's like, there's like yoga moves. And I saw like just like a shit ton of people doing those moves and entering this meditative state that felt really... just lovely. I mean, normally that when they put that on Fox News, it just looks like violent. But when you're really experiencing it, looks so lovely. It feels like a lovely moment that you're just, you know, kind of witnessing people take a minute for themselves and for whatever their feelings of spirituality and for their belief in God, whatever it is, taking a minute. And you don't really see people do that very much, like in life. And
especially I think, I'll go to keep going.
Yeah,
I didn't want to cut you off.
Yeah, say it.
Well, I was just going to say that prior to losing my son, I am also not a very spiritual or religious person. And for most of my life, I would describe my feeling towards like those institutions or whatever and traditions as somewhat disdainful. But mm-hmm. having lost my son, I do have a new appreciation for those like daily rituals.
Yeah.
Of like, you know, and whether they are a way to communicate with God or not sort of becomes irrelevant to me. And it's like, this is a, can be about a practice or about a way to remember or about a way. It opened my eyes to the idea that this may be more useful than just what I had sort of thought of it as this completely illogical set of beliefs. That it's like, if you stop thinking about it that way and think about it more as a practice, as you say, that you do for yourself and to connect with people, maybe it makes sense,
yeah.
even if it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And it,
I have less judgment about it than I used to.
Yeah. And I think like seeing, it's funny because I think also we see, we it's as Americans, I think, are hardwired to see religion in some sort of judgmental way. Either we like it that someone is praying, like in a Christian sense, or we're afraid of it in a, you know, Muslim sense, or where, you know, there's so much polarization around religion, or there, you know, that, what am I trying to say here? That like, it's hard to remember that at the basic level. It's sort of like remembering that someone's a human being when they don't respond to your email, like,
yeah.
and just like, oh, they like lost me. Like, it's again like remembering that whatever your macroeconomic assessment of religion is, also who cares what your assessment is, but whatever that is, the prayer is being done by like individuals who have fatigue and grief and joy and all these like different feelings, and what does it look like to be compassionate about that and to just feel like, oh, it's cool, they're getting something out of that.
Yeah.
And not have judgment out, you know, in it. And I used to be, I think, a lot more judgmental.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
The thing I want to ask you, because one of the people who has messaged me about the show asked me a question that I had forgotten to ask anyone until right now,
mm-hmm.
which is, this was a religious person who's like, in her message, she was like, I felt like I've sort of fallen away from the church, and the church was how I used to deal with my grief, like conversations with God.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have that anymore. How do people who don't have that sense of conduit to a higher power process their grief? Like, how is it possible? And I didn't even know if I like exactly what my answer for that was. Like, I process it in 100 different ways.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that any of them are good, quote unquote. And also to say that even though I never have had any certainty about the existence of a God, once my child started to get super sick, and this all happened very quickly and then eventually died, I found myself praying, even though I wasn't praying to someone or something that I expected to do anything about.
Yeah.
I wasn't like, I'm going to say this and a man in the sky is going to go, oh, shit. We weren't paying attention. Let us, can I get somebody over there to the hospital to fix that one kid? I wasn't expecting any of that.
Yeah.
But I definitely found myself being like, hey, if the universe can hear this, I just need to say it.
Yeah. And so the question is like, what do you do when you don't have a higher power that you have?
Yeah, I think so. Where do you, if there's no one to talk to up there, what is it that you do? How do you process? How do you heal?
Yeah. I mean, I think, it's like I have an aunt who reads fortunes off of, coffee grounds.
Wait, I don't even know. I don't even know what that means. What does that mean?
Okay. I'm sorry. Do you not understand that? There's a tradition in some Middle Eastern countries that you drink this like very thick kind of like Turkish coffee.
Okay.
And then it leaves this like these grounds at the end and that residue.
In the cup. I see.
And then it formulates like an image, and fortune tellers will read the grounds
and tell you
something about your state of affairs.
I wasn't sure if it was like on the back of if you meant by reads, tells fortunes in the coffee that she would like, there was a horoscope on the back of the coffee can, but that's not what you mean. You mean she's like it's like a tarot card reader, but instead of tarot cards, it's the grounds.
Right.
Got it.
Yeah, no. It's like just straight up like looking at the thing. And you know, it's funny because my aunt tried to teach me like, once, like, what to look for and how to see it and all that stuff. And, you know, it's ridiculous, but it's fun and who knows, you know. And I feel the same, you know, I feel about the way I engage with that stuff is very similar because I'm like, oh, I don't believe in this, but maybe. So there's I do a but maybe, like, on basically everything in the spiritual realm.
Yeah, right. Could be.
And yeah, you know, because I'm just like, you don't want to be the asshole that's like, definitely not, you know, and then you're proven wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't want to be that.
You get to the afterlife and God's just standing there with his arms folded and being like, excuse me.
Yeah.
What did you say? Who feels like an idiot now?
Exactly. And then you have to like do a whole mea culpa with God or whatever. And it's like annoying. No amount of, you know, gift baskets will, it'll take too many.
Yeah.
But so I think, so I feel like I do I'll do conversations in my head, like prayers, if you want to call them that, in situations like that. In a but maybe way, but also maybe just in a meditation way, like in a, you know, like talking to my own heart kind of way or something.
Sure.
And then I think the other way that you have a conduit about, you know, if you aren't in a church, what do you do? Honestly, this is so dorky, but like, this is the worst answer I could give. But I honestly think that it's like a brunch with my friends. You know what I mean? It's like, that is my...
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. That makes a lot of sense to me.
And it's so funny. I have, you know, these groups of friends that like, you know, that we meet up for like a dinner or whatever. Invariably someone cries. And it's because we're like, just like putting our guts on the table about what's going on and how we feel about it. And it is, it's a confessional.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like, you know, modern life has that baked in with like, with friends and friendship.
I think that's so, that just rings very true to me. I think that for me, the idea of, like the reason that I would pray, I think in those times was also because I was like, I don't think anyone I know in the world will understand the thing that I'm feeling right now.
Yeah.
So that's why I have to like talk to the universe.
Yeah.
I have to talk into a shoebox that, you know, they can't possibly respond to me.
Yeah.
Not knowing, of course, that millions of people understand what I'm feeling like.
Right. Totally. Yeah.
But because it's like kind of like a secret in the universe, I didn't know that. I didn't know. So now I'm like, now, so my answer to this person would be similar, I think, to yours, Nagin, which is talk to your friends. Like, that's share the feelings that you have, because you'll also find out that a lot of them have similar feelings that you that they don't ever talk about.
Yeah. And also that you know, there's these weird things that you admit to that you think are so weird about yourself. You know, like in the beginning of this episode where it was like, I feel like weirdly I need to have a public cry. And if I don't, I don't have the right kind of closure. And you're like, yeah.
Of course.
You know, and it turns out that all these things that you feel really weird about talking about are like everyone has those weird thoughts, except they're not weird. They're super mainstream.
That's exactly right. I think there's a lot of people who, most people, who continue to pretend that they don't have those thoughts.
Yeah.
Because they feel shame about grief or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so they're like, what do you mean? No, have I ever wanted to lie down on the subway floor and cry and say, everyone look at me? No, what are you, insane? But secretly it's like, that is what I want to do. I want to stop the train and be like, everybody look at me. I'm going to cry for 15 minutes. Don't talk.
Yeah. No, and then the funny thing is, I don't know if you've talked about this already, but like, specifically the subway cry. Mm-hmm. There's something about sitting on a subway that gives you, a really, really momentary access to your deepest fears just for like a moment.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And you're just like, and you're, you know, whatever the shape of your pain is becomes exactly clear to you, like on the 4 train.
That's exactly right.
You know what I mean? There's something about that. And I don't know what it is. Folks, if you live in other places that are not New York City, come to New York to learn about yourself.
Or find your subway. I'm sure like whatever, in Richmond, Virginia, there's a particular bus stop where if you go to that bus stop, you're going to find people just crying.
Exactly. And it's so funny because I was having a grief moment and I was on the F train and this woman quivered, your lips quivering, you're trying to hold it in. You can't hold it in. It just starts streaming out. And then you're like, hopefully no one will notice, you know?
Yeah.
And then this woman, I can't, like, this was like humanity at its best. She had a full one of those travel packs of Kleenex.
Tissues, you sure?
And she, did you not want me to use the brand name? I'm so sorry. Is that not, that's like.
Oh my God, no, I don't care.
That's where this podcast draws the line.
Yeah, we're at a war with Kleenex. I use this podcast to market my own brand of tissues. At the end of every episode, I'm like, try Michael's flushable wipes or whatever. Sorry, finish your story.
So she hands me this little travel pack of tissues. And she said something like, I think she said, and this is, again, cliche, but it was so perfect at the moment. She said, I promise you it gets better. And like that, and then she just sat back down and the next stop she got off and left.
I love that story so much.
I mean, right? First of all, who carries a fully formed travel pack of Kleenex in their purse? That, you know what I mean? But
yes.
Second of all,
that's the kind of stuff that will make you believe in angels. That exact moment where you're like, maybe there is a God.
Completely, because also she knew that I was in it. That it was at the height where I couldn't control the tears, where they came, where they didn't come. And she knew that it would get better, and it did, right?
Yeah.
And it was amazing. It was remarkable. Like, I will always remember this one random lady who did this for me.
Can I ask you? You said you were in a grief moment. You don't have to answer this question if you don't want to. But what is, like, what was that moment? Do you remember what it was you were thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, one of my aunts died, and she had spent a lot of time with us, and her son had died not too long before in a freak accident, and I was actually just my dad, who had really grown up with this woman. She was a great aunt, actually, weirdly, but because of Iranian family structures, she wasn't that far in age from a regular aunt for me.
Okay.
And my dad had really grown up with this woman, and you know, he was beside himself, but like couldn't say that. And I was just like thinking, like, what can I do for my dad? I have nothing I can do for him. And he doesn't express emotions in a normal way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. You were talking about that at the beginning of the thing. We haven't even gotten to it yet. So,
right. But this is the, yeah, this is that thing.
So we're on to part two now.
Part two.
What did you mean by that? When you say that grief is expressed differently by maybe your parents and other immigrants than it is by people who are born and raised completely in the West, what did you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, hashtag not all immigrants. It's like, it's weird. There's something very strange, I think, about Iranians in particular, because, you know, for example, one of my aunts, again, I'm using the word aunt very freely because I literally have so many. But one of my aunts
has... I'm Filipino. The Filipino side is also like every single Filipino on earth is your cousin. They're all your cousin. They're all cousins.
Yeah. Totally. No, exactly. But one of my aunts was in Iran during the revolution in 1979, and she was pregnant. And she was in school. She was at the University of Tehran, which was like a big center of revolutionary activity. And the Royal Guard would come in and break shit up all the time at the university and like rough students up and whatever. So they roughed her up one day in one of these situations, and they roughed her up so hard that she had a miscarriage.
Shit.
And the way she tells the story is like, so I order the Eggs Benedict, and they came to me with an omelet. I mean, guys, how ridiculous. You know, like, that's how she tells the story.
Yeah.
She is not, she just doesn't, and I don't know if it's that then she had to go through, like, through war. There was an Iran-Iraq war, you know, obviously everybody knows, but I'll just to remind you. It's like the revolution and then a war. And it's just like, oh my God, so much crazy shit happened. That was actually the least of it, that I had to have a miscarriage because of the revolution, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. People like being, you know, having their own personal tragedy in the midst of like geopolitical strife to be like, well, oh, and this was another thing that happened. Also, there was this.
Yeah. And I think that like they just have been through so much shit that they don't make a big deal out of these individual points of loss.
Yeah.
And so many, you know, people, especially like, you know, during the war, and there were so many people were lost. Like, but they talk about it with a real casual air. And I think it has to do with really being put through it, coming out on the other side, and then maybe just not wanting to emote so hard because I don't know what it is. But you know, like my dad, like, you know, my parents, whenever they've lost everybody, several thousand miles away, and they've kept their crying in front of me to a very, very minimum.
What is your opinion of that? Like, do you look at that and go, oh, that's like an interesting cultural difference? Wish you could also feel that way? Or
I think it's a cultural difference. I think there's a, like, you know, don't show vulnerability. Like, I think also, like, immigrants in America are just so used to just like, you better work to survive. This is all about, you know, getting through this. Like, there will be no fun. And like, there's a little.
Right. The suffering is not just part of it. It's it.
It is it. Yeah. So I feel like it's all a part of that. And like, to cry or, you know, is maybe being like self-indulgent when you really should just be working. You know what a good anecdote is to grief? It's just work.
Yeah, right. I think my East Coast liberal mind is like, yeah, that doesn't exactly sound right. You really should be processing things. But there's another part of me that's like, I look at, you know, not like what people think of as toxic masculinity, but more of like just generally the quote unquote good aspects of old school masculinity of just like, yeah, bro, I don't fucking have feelings. That's just, I don't do that. And there is a part of me that's like, we're positive that that's bad? We're sure. Everybody, we know that that's bad? Okay.
Totally.
If everybody says it's bad, I'm sure it's bad.
Right. Cause there is a thing of like, compartmentalizing and suppressing does sound pretty good sometimes, you know? Cause then,
yeah. Wouldn't there be some times where if I just stuffed this all down, I would feel much better, though? No? Okay, no? Fine.
Yeah, no, completely. I remember this was not over someone passing, but I was just really sad over a breakup because the relationship was very, very, it was like, you know, like 8 years. And I really, what I wanted to do was stop crying. I just didn't want to cry. I actually, yeah, the crying part felt uncontrollable and I really wanted to get rid of it. And I'm a stand-up comedian also, you know what I mean? So it's like I had some professional obligations that required me not crying.
Sure.
And I wanted to take up marijuana. And so my friends were like, hey, you should really try marijuana. It'll really like stop the crying.
Okay.
And I was like, great. That's great. And so I was like, who's going to get me, what is it? What are we doing? A tablespoon of marijuana? Like, how does it work? What are the amounts? Let's do this, you know? How are they doled out these days?
I'll take, I guess, a bucket. What are they coming?
And so a friend of mine got me some sort of an amount of marijuana. And then I did a bunch of like research on YouTube on how to roll a joint. I was just like, I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to really do this thing. And I did a smokings of a marijuanas.
Sure, one of the smokings.
And I was like, oh, this is highly effective at not making me want to cry. Like, I definitely don't, you know. And so I did it a couple times. And then like by day three, I was like, I would just forget to like do the marijuana. And then day four, I was like, God damn, I forgot again. And like, I was just like, God, I am such a terrible pot head that I can't even, I was like, do people set alarms? Like, how does this work for other people that they're so good at doing it all the time?
That's the one thing that potheads always remember, and that is to smoke more pot.
I thought you were going to say is to schedule in their calendar a reminder to smoke more pot.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's like, hey, Google, remind me to smoke more pot Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday at 6 a.m., 9 a.m. and noon, please.
Yeah.
Okay, I wanted to ask you a couple more questions, and those are, do you feel like you've learned something from grief? Has grief changed you in some way?
That's a really good question. I feel like it's got, like I mentioned before, that it's just gotten me less judgmental about how people handle things.
I think that's wonderful, by the way, because I don't think I want to say it did that for me. And I think it does sometimes. But most of the time, I think people are like, you know, when I tell people about loss, that they're like, oh, wow, like you're so brave and like you must be really wise. And it's like, I'm actually a complete piece of shit. Like, I don't know if it's made me better in any way. I do sometimes logically, I'm like, okay, well, this person I'm sure has their own, I'm sure something is going on with this person, but I'm still pretty annoyed that they did this very insignificant thing to me.
Right. I honestly think, I mean, I think my compassion levels and stuff are like pretty, my empathy levels are like pretty high. Maybe even too high, but like, I think that it's helped me with that, because I don't think I was like this empathetic, you know, when I was younger.
Yeah, I think that makes sense to me. I think for me, I know I was joking before, but being a little bit more serious.
Yeah.
I think I wasn't aware of how sad a person could be until this happened.
Yeah.
So now that's a possibility in my mind when I'm like, you know, I think I'm like a big time noticer. Like I see people, someone getting angry or sad before other people notice that it's happening. And I think now I'm just aware that that can be much worse than I thought it could be before. like, oh, that person seems kind of sad, let me leave them alone. Now I'm like, that person seems really fucking sad. Maybe let me go see what's up. You know what I mean? Let me see if I can be of any use. And maybe that use is shut the fuck up and stay away from me. But now I'm aware that like you can be sadder than I knew you could be before, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I also think, you know, like that's the subway story was a big moment for me because this woman was a total stranger. And I realized like up until that moment, I probably ignored a lot of people's obvious sadness.
Yeah.
And after that, I was way more likely to just be like, hey, are you all right? You know, can I help you with something or whatever? And then it's funny because it also, I've done that a few times, right? And it's jolted people out of that really deep, horrible thing that's bubbling up.
Yeah.
And I think that has actually helped them, you know? I hope.
I hope.
Of just even it just asking like, hey, just so you know, you're not alone. Like, hey.
Yeah. And I see you is even I see you, I think, is a big part of
yeah.
it. Like, hey, I noticed this.
Yeah.
You're not totally living in isolation where no one pays attention or cares about this.
Exactly. And I think the recognition of that like jolts them out of the like little subway spiral they might be in.
Yeah, the irretrievable sadness that's about to overcome them for
yes.
48 to 72 hours or more.
Yeah.
Okay, and I had one more for you, Nagin, which is you mentioned having lost your grandmother and a cousin and a great aunt and others probably over in Iran.
And another cousin, yeah.
Do you think of those people as being someplace now? I mean, it doesn't have to be as literal as like, you know, they're in the sky or they're ghosts or, well, just anything.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to think of them as just nowhere. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't like to think of them as in the dirt, you know?
Sure.
So I think, yes, like in the sky or whatever, or like suffused in the soul of the universe somehow. Like, yes, I haven't been able to articulate it. I'm open to ideas.
Okay.
But I at least know that I don't love thinking about them just in the ground.
Yeah. I think, I go back and forth. I think I like you, get some comfort out of the idea of my son being someplace. But there are also times, the way you put it is, you don't like thinking of them that way. There is a part of me that's like, I might not like it, but that might just be, you know, that might just be what it is. Maybe that's just he's just dust now and there is no consciousness of him orbiting me or, you know, watching over me while I do whatever. But I prefer to feel as though he's someplace.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is we'll, like, never know. So we can go in and just make that choice.
Maybe we will.
Maybe. I mean, yeah.
Maybe we will one day know.
I guess, you know, they did put man on the moon, so maybe they'll figure this out.
Or so they say. That's what they'd like us to believe. Nagin, thank you so much for doing this. And you are wonderful.
No, thank you. So is it weird to be like, this was so fun?
I don't think people would expect that from before they listen to the podcast. But I do think a lot of these conversations, when you are someone who has suffered grief, the conversations, I love talking about death and grief because I had never done it until, you know, pretty recently. So it always feels like a little bit less weight that I carry whenever I have them. So thank you for having this with me. I had a lot of fun.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm so, I feel a little more strangely like enlightened or something about loss.
Whoa, that's huge.
I do.
All right. I'm using that as a blurb from one of my own podcast guests. It's enlightening. Okay, thank you, Nagin. Thank you to everyone for listening. This was another episode of A Good Cry. I hope it helps. A Good Cry is produced by Radio Point and HeadGum with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, Richard Corson, Daniel Powell, and Houston Snyder. Recorded, edited, and mixed by Bree Mattan.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.